From an undisclosable location wafting on the electromagnetic wave, it is the ever-loving mothership. Cometh the hour and cometh the big old mothership. This is Coast to Coast AM, John B., and with you for the conclusion of a completely unique experience, which was filling in for George Norrie last week from Tuesday through Friday, having a great open line session with everybody out there last night, and then doing the Saturday night thing tonight. It's like, I feel born again. Ow. You know, I'm wondering, do you remember this one? Caramel, popcorn, peanuts, and a prize. That's what you get in what? Yes, you were correct. Cracker Jacks. I ate a box of Cracker Jacks today. You know, just to sort of be bad. And it took me back. I felt the same way I did when I was a lad. Gee, that was delicious, but this is really kind of a disappointing prize. I get a prize? Yes. Why do I get a prize? Did I win? No, absolutely. What did I win? A prize. Why? You ate the Cracker Jacks. Tonight's program is a little bit like that. Now, unlike the real Cracker Jacks, you have to take in and digest a little corn. It's sugar-coated. Don't worry about it. Before you can get to the prize, but I assure you the prize tonight will not be, well, a less than satisfactory one. There are no children of that age that will be impressed by the little toy that or prize that they get. They're not awake at this hour, so we're not harming anybody. It's not like giving away that Santa Claus thing. All right, there's a lot of stuff going on. That is for sure. The, oh boy. I mean, everything from a group in Idaho wanting to build a neighborhood, like a giant real estate compound to observe constitutional values and secure their persons and each other, to an internet nightmare. Reddit co-founder, Mr. Schwartz, 26 years old, commits suicide. We're going to talk about that with David Seaman here in just a few minutes, about 30 minutes. And then there's all of this stuff. Deaf guy gets attacked after sign language mistaken for gang signs. Unbelievable. You know, I mean, seriously. And then this flu emergency in New York. I have talked to people all over the country, from the East Coast all the way up to Alaska. And it seems to be equally spread out. But I was wondering, since it's a different flu virus every year, what exactly are we vaccinating against? I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm certainly not a doctor. Sometimes I wish I'd become one. I have lots of nice, well, endorsements. But I digress. It's odd, don't you think, that I'm sure this is somewhat common, but if it's this virulent strain of flu, wouldn't you think that everybody in a household would get it? But that's not the case. In some cases, two or three people out of a family of five or six will get it. In some households, everybody gets it. At the office, a couple of people get it, 10 people don't get it. Now back in that section of the building, six people got it and three people didn't get it. That's just odd. So guess what? We're going to talk with Doc Nevada. We're going to talk to Dr. Gary Ridenour. He's been on the program before. His book is Pandemic. And matter of fact, why don't we just bring him on right now? Is Gary Ridenour ready to ride?
I'm here.
Hey, Doc Nevada. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
You know, there's all this stuff going around about, I mean, there's so much crazy disinformation, misinformation, and misunderstanding about these vaccines. And then somebody will come along with some, look at this, this looks to be true. A lot of people are just plain skittish about these vaccines, particularly these flu vaccines. So what's going on with this new flu mutation that's not covered by any vaccine?
Well, what it is, it's called H3N2, which we've seen before, but it's gone through what we call a genetic shift, which is once this virus got out and started going through human beings, it started meeting other viruses and swapping genetic information. So like saying that H3N2 is, oh, it's a car like all the rest of the cars. No, this is like the Batmobile. This thing is bad.
So Now, I know you can't go out there and go and say, don't take a flu vaccine, don't get a flu shot. And I'm not trying to get you to do that, but is this flu vaccine by any sort of measurement effective?
It's very controversial. There are people quoted that it's 70 to 90% effective. Right now, I would recommend that if you're over 6 months or over 60 years of age, get it, because those are the two target areas that are getting hit the hardest. CIDRAP, C-I-D-R-A-P, Dr. Osterholm has an 84-page report on vaccines, and he quite says that there's no robust protection. You get a flu shot, you are not bulletproof.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, this is actually quite a big deal. Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York State, declared a public health emergency Saturday, and the flu epidemic rocked the nation. Hospitals and urgent care centers saw huge crowds. They got tents set up outside Chicago hospitals.
Yeah, that's, the East Coast got rocked by Sandy. So, you know, they lost houses, they lost doctors' offices, drug stores, homes, hospitals, and it ended up with population density, people living with their relatives and the population getting tighter and closer together, which allows the virus to be spread better. And Boston, for example, has a 900% increase compared to last year.
They've even got an app out for your smartphone where you can see where the hot areas are.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. There's Google Flu Trends, and I'm looking at it right now, and they're actually ahead of the CDC on their trending. And I'm looking at the graph right now, and it from mid-November on, it's going up at almost a 45-degree angle and shows no signs of coming down.
No, it has been fatal in some cases, but not like the one that hit us at the earlier part of the last century.
No, actually, for example, in 68, around the world, we lost about 1 million people. And there have been pandemics before, and of course, you know, in 1918, 1957, 1968, 9, and 2009, there was a pandemic. And our problem with the vaccine is that reality needs to win over public relations, politics, and money, and come up with something that's going to really do the job.
I want to call you Dr. Gary, but I don't think I will.
Go ahead.
I'll call you Doc Nevada. I'll just call you Doc. Let me ask you something. This has been dogging me for a while. Back in 1918, that flu killed how many million people?
50 million
people. Now, my question is, what flu was that? And if this avian flu is so potentially deadly, why has nothing on that scale happened since? It suggests that some of these vaccines are, in fact, keeping it away, but that's just an idea. I don't know.
It's very, once again, controversial that the vaccines are keeping it away. The 1918 H1N1, it was during the First World War. We were shipping tons of men across to Europe infected with the virus. The virus came from the United States. They went to Europe, which was decimated, and it started to spread. And at one point, the Germans had to give up the war because they ran out of people because of the flu.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
They looked around and went, we don't have anybody left here.
I think we better call a truce. Anybody got a white flag handy? I tell you what, we'll be back in just a minute with Dr. Gary Ridenour. We're going to talk some more about this flu thing that's all over the country. It's all over the country. I want to ask him if it's all over the world as well. We'll be right back. This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. All right, there we are. Now, let me ask you something, Dr. Gary Ridenour. Are people in other parts of the world suffering from either this or some other kind of flu? Because you track this stuff all over the world, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And I was just reading that there's a different variant in Mexico right now. And most other, you know, Europe and that is pointing to us as being the ones that are really having the major problem. It is appearing in Europe, but it doesn't seem to have such a foothold as it has here.
What does that suggest to you, doctor? Because, you know, there's a lot of air traffic that goes between here and Europe.
Frankly, I think if I was a stewardess today, I would ask anyone who had a cold on board, that please put a mask on and hand them one and have them put it on.
Not a shemag, just a regular mask, right?
Yeah, a painter's mask, you know, just a scarf, anything. Yeah. You know, cover your face if you're on board the plane and you're coughing and you're sick. But the I think that, you know, it's getting over there, and the population density is pretty good. So I think, you know, maybe a few months, you know, maybe a month or so before they get going. We're looking right now at maybe 200,000 people in the hospital and 20,000 plus dead this year.
Well, that beats 50 million, doesn't it?
It does, but it's still, you know.
Unless it's somebody that you love, of course, in which case it might as well be 50 million.
That's true, and the problem is that they're estimating right now that the infection rate is 9% of the population.
And will this? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's 9% of the population is going to get infected, and that's the Google prediction on that.
You're saying 9?
9% of
nine, okay.
The country. And the problem is that we've already had about 20 children that have already died. Over the age of 6 months and over the age of 60 is good, and also anyone with a chronic disease, like they got heart disease and diabetes, they should call their doctor up and they should get the shot. Like I said, is not making you completely bulletproof. It may reduce your flu symptoms if you do get the flu. And, you know, at this point, I think it's the only choice we got. Unfortunately, it's, according to Osterholm, we're far from any sort of getting a good flu out there.
And Gary, you're not, you can explain this in a way that won't be like, oh, no, mate, I'd rather listen to an algebra lecture, you know. But let me ask you something. Some people are under the impression that these vaccines are live virus. I just heard recently that, no, it's not a live virus. It's a dead virus.
Yeah, so it's parts of a virus that when it goes into your system, your immune system will turn on to it and develop some immunity to it.
But aren't you late if you take the vaccine after you already have the flu? Aid in the antibody development that you're already doing in an effort for the body to combat the virus? Or what's happening?
Well, in my practice, I've seen people get the flu and then come back in and had the flu again. So you can get it twice. You could get a slightly different genetic variant of it and go down a second time. So if you get the flu and get out and you're, you know, 60 or over or over 6 months, it's probably a good idea to still get the vaccine if you can get it. There's a lot of shortages right now in the United States, and Tamiflu is a good medicine to take. But the problem is that a lot of people will get sick and they still go to work and they spread it.
You know, I hesitate to ask you this, so I'll try and do it the diplomatic way without robbing you of what would otherwise be office visits. And that is this: on Christmas night, I made it until about 11:30, and then I began to feel very aware of not feeling all that well. So I went to sleep, and I got out of the bed at 10:30 in the morning, Thursday. For that period of time, it was, you know, muscle aches and chills, but no real fever and aching everything, eyeballs, headache, and everything else. This one guy sent an email that said, could we, like, listen to Wells where he's, like, not stoned? It's like, well, you're close, honey, because I just came. That's why I didn't see you on Friday nights, because I didn't think that would be good radio to say, hey, I'm ill. Why don't you tune in to 4 hours with somebody else?
So well,
I just bowed out of it, you know.
I got the vaccine last year, and on February 15th, they rolled me out of my house with a blood pressure of 60 over 40 and dripping cold sweat, and I spent 3 days in the hospital. And
I got off easy.
Maybe it saved my life, but it wasn't the first day. The aches and pains were so bad that I could barely move in the bed. I mean, I was crying sometimes because it hurt so bad. I couldn't get up and out of bed. And then my wife came home and fed me something and tucked me back in. And about 4 a.m, she woke me up and said, you're cold as ice. The whole bed is soaked. I'm calling the ambulance. And there was no discussion on that one. I just went, yep. And but the thing is that if you just wear face masks wash your hands and stay, you know, it'd be really neat if everybody in the United States could stay home for 3 days.
Wouldn't it?
That would probably end it. That would end the transmission if everyone stayed home for 3 days. But we,
you know, we could do that, and we could also send, the corporate elites a message at the same time. Hey, look what happens when nothing's happening.
Yeah, it's going to be, it would be interesting. But that's, like I said, is that, you know, for the children going to school, you know, for the girls, you get them a scarf to wear around their neck at school. And for the boys, hey, it's fun to wear a bandana. And, you know,
I'm not sure that's going to go over in this climate of late.
Yeah, that's true. I kind of thought that was a bad idea, too.
And I made a smart aleck remark a while ago about a shemag, but I'm telling you, you know, it's like people are skittish. Look, Gary, they're still not labeling the 13th floor of buildings. I mean, what does that tell us about our evolution? You know,
not only that, people say, I got the flu shot and it gave me the flu. That's not true. A lot of people are afraid of the flu shot for various reasons that, and on the internet, there's a lot of myths that are explained about getting the flu shot, and they're not true. I mean, the things that I'll get sicker if I get the shot, and I had a friend that got it and they got real sick and died, and you know, all that kind of hearsay sort of stuff. At this point, it's the only thing we got really, and other than staying home and face masks, wash our hands, you know, it's just, that's all there is to it.
So when you are afflicted, let's say you can't get to hospital, you can't, you're stuck at home.
Yep.
What can you do for yourself besides a toddy?
Well, the first thing is, you know, analgesics, Motrin, things like that to cut the aching down. Lots of liquids, and you've got to drink enough liquids so that you actually will, what we call pee clear, that the urine coming out has no color to it.
Right.
Oddly enough, chicken noodle soup has sodium, potassium, carbohydrates, and fluids in it. So that's the old standby. That's good also. And the biggest thing is staying in bed and staying away from everybody.
Yeah, I was delighted that that's just an example. I'm a living example of what I was talking about a while ago. None of the people I was around got the flu.
Well, nobody came up to my room, so nobody in the house got it either.
All right. Well, that's kind of the same situation, actually. Okay, I get it.
I was off limits to everybody.
So it doesn't just waft around. Somebody's got to sneeze at you, or you have to touch something that they touch that has the virus in it, and then you touch your nose, your eyeballs, your mouth, or something, and now it's in.
You're off to the races. And we're talking about some people get it and some people don't. Some people have certain genes that give them better protection against things like these viruses. The problem is there's 170 influenza viruses out there, and we've just seen a few. So, I mean, this little puppy making the changes is quite, you know, distressing. That what are we going to look at coming next year? You know, right now, when you get your vaccine, and this is, I tell everybody, when you get your vaccine, you're still a year behind from what's coming this year.
Oh, boy.
Because they haven't put this year's into the vaccine yet. So you're always running a year behind right now. And that's why Osterholm and these guys said that we need a lot of work to find out what is a better influenza vaccine and what we should be doing, you know, during these periods. Right now, this is a devastation. This is an epidemic. And it's, you know, it's above what we would expect for this infection to happen. And if you go on Google, on the Google flu map, like I said before, is that that angle is going almost straight to 45 degrees, almost straight to the ceiling. I mean, it's, and it hasn't dropped off yet.
And Dr. Battle, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
A virus is a short-lived thing, yes?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I guess my question is, how long can this thing go on? I mean, does it just keep replicating itself, or does it, like, re-spontaneously appear? Or how is it that this thing drags on for, you know, sometimes months?
Well,
why doesn't it just hit everybody at once, and then the virus's life expectancy has expired, and it's gone now?
No, it what it does is that it gets into your cells, and it hijacks your DNA, and you start replicating and making viruses, and they break out of your cells and make you contagious, and then you start spreading the virus. And then other people may pick up the virus and maybe have only a short period of being sick, but the virus is moving on again. And the 1918 virus, they dug it up in Alaska in the permafrost, and it was still alive.
I got you. Listen, we got to go, but it was a pleasure to have you on the program.
Great.
Dr. Gary Ridenour, come back and see us again soon, will you?
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your work. His book is Pandemic. His website is pandemicdirect.com. Next, David Seaman. Oh, boy, Aaron Swartz found hanged. Wait till you hear this story. We'll be right back. You know, back long ago, it seems like ancient history, and it almost is, when I was a fan of Coast to Coast AM, just a nightly listener, one Mr. Arthur Bell used to say, something is going on. He'd say that all the time. And it's true, just like that music that you're hearing, it's more prophetic now than ever before. Yeah, something is going on. I mean, will it be an invasion of flying saucers burying extraterrestrials, acting on their own, or ETs that have already hooked up with the elites? Or maybe some federation of light or liberation? Are we living in the end days? I don't know. Is that a real demon, a real demon face floating through the bedroom in the middle of the night? Is it real? Or is it a luminescent balloon with a demon face painted on it? That's the end of its string. There's a fish hook, and it's been inadvertently hooked on the back of some burglar's pants. I don't know. But all of these subjects, all of the subjects and topics that seem relevant to our human condition here and now in 2013, we will explore and explore and doggedly stay on it until we find out. Is it a real demon face? Or is it just a balloon? All right, this doesn't look good. It doesn't. Given everything and the loss of so many people and the actions of various banks against manufacturers and people who are threatening to uncover information, like Julian Assange, who did release information, and others who were thought to maybe release some information that maybe they shouldn't have. Well, if it's what it might be, then it's good that we have people like David Seaman around. He's gotten in trouble by a certain large media corporation, actually censored for posting a little bit too much truth. David Seaman, he'll join us next, and we will discuss the death of Aaron Swartz. As I said before, wait till you hear this one. He's the founder, or formerly the founder, of Reddit. Stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. David Seaman, independent journalist, frequent contributor to Business Insider, a lively guest in the past on CNN Headline News, Fox, ABC News Digital, among others, and on his humble YouTube channel, David Seaman, S-E-A-M-A-N, right? Not S-E-A-M-A-N. Online, David Seaman Online. Some say he was recently censored by a certain large media corporation for posting a little bit too much truth. So hopefully we can broadcast a little bit too much truth tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, David. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me back on. I'm sorry that it's such a depressing topic that I have to discuss tonight. But
what a tragedy. What a brilliant kid, and suffered from depression, the report says. And what's going on? Just bring us up to speed. You take it away.
Sure. The quick summary of this is that he was a co-founder of Reddit, which is one of the most popular websites on the internet, the social news site. And his other big achievement, when he was only 14 years old, he was one of the inventors of RSS, which is one of the standards that the modern internet is really built on. Things like, if you download podcasts to your phone, maybe you download this show's podcast, if you subscribe to different websites and have content automatically updated on your web browser, this was all a standard that he developed when he was a teenager. And he was a true internet visionary. This would be kind of the equivalent of waking up one day and realizing that, you know, like a 26-year-old version of Bill Gates had committed suicide. He actually hanged himself yesterday in his apartment in New York City. And it's quite terrifying in a lot of ways, because the government was going after him over something that doesn't even appear to really be a serious crime. And they wanted to put him away for 30 years or more in federal prison and also levy fines of more than $1 million. And a lot of people out there were saying that this was all just kind of a witch hunt, that the federal government really wanted to go after this guy because he founded an advocacy group called Demand Progress, which I would encourage everybody to Google. And Demand Progress was one of the major groups that warned the public about SOPA, the internet censorship legislation that was not able to pass due to the widespread public outrage. And his group also was one of the major groups out there warning the public about NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which contains some language that would appear to allow the military in some circumstances to abduct or detain American citizens without charge or trial, even on U.S. soil.
So what exactly was he charged with? He pleaded not guilty to fraud in last year in 2012, but the case remained open at the time of his death. He faced decades in prison and how much money in fines?
I believe over $1 million. And what he was charged with, or what they were going after him for, he was a big advocate of, you know, making information free. And what he was doing, one of his latest projects, were downloading these academic journals in a database that was called JSTOR. And normally JSTOR, people have to pay for the individual articles in that archive system. And these are, you know, articles written by people at the scholarly level, people in colleges and universities. And he just wanted to download all of that stuff and make it freely available to everybody. And he did that. He didn't even do that. He just downloaded the documents. He didn't actually release them. And we're not talking about, like, Julian Assange WikiLeaks stuff here. These were not state secrets. These were not the names of, you know, secret agents or troop movements or anything like this. These were pretty boring academic articles. And he just wanted them to be more widely available to people on the internet. And I feel like, or not just me, I mean, it seems like they really threw the book at him for this. And this is not my opinion. This is actually a statement that his family released. If I could just read one paragraph from that.
Read as much as you like.
Okay, great. So this is a direct quote from their statement. I believe they released this today. Aaron's death is not simply a personal tragedy. It is the product of a criminal justice system rife with intimidation and prosecutorial overreach. Decisions made by officials in the Massachusetts U.S. Attorney's Office and at MIT contributed to his death. The U.S. Attorney's Office pursued an exceptionally harsh array of charges, carrying potentially over 30 years in prison to punish an alleged crime that had no victims. Meanwhile, unlike JSTOR, MIT refused to stand up for Aaron and its own community's most cherished principles. And that's the end of the quote. But to me, it's just troubling because there are already so few people with his level of influence and clout in the business community and the tech community who are willing to stand up to things like SOPA and things like NDAA. And now he's one less voice that this country, you know, this country now has one less voice. And that to me is, it's really frightening that the government would go after somebody like this who should be considered one of our national treasures. You know, like, he was definitely up there as one of the top internet innovators. And the whole thing is just, It's craziness. I don't know how high it goes, but it seems like there is definitely an effort to ruin this guy, basically, you know, an effort to ruin him.
You know, one of the first things that crossed my mind about this whole thing was why didn't they offer him a job? I mean, they've routinely hired people who are just absolutely expert crackers. And, you know, people that hack into the all sorts of high-level stuff, and they arrest them and go, say, you know, almost like Catch Me If You Can. Say, you're such a good forger. Why don't you come work for us so you can help us bust people who forge? Is it generally understood that he suffered with depression? Because a lot of brilliant people do, and this kid was just off the charts brilliant.
Yeah, my understanding of it is that he did suffer from depression based on what I've read about him. And there are people out there who are attributing this suicide entirely to his illness. And I would be very hesitant to do that, kind of disservice to him, because if you're perfectly psychologically, you know, healthy and not depressed, if your legal team tells you, and this is to be clear with your listeners, this is just speculation on my part, but if his legal team told him, look, it looks like you're going to have to do some time, we don't see a way around this because he wasn't willing to plead guilty. If that's what his legal team told him, and he knows that he's facing 35 years in a federal prison, you know, either being by himself for decades or, you know, being somebody's prison toy, and, you know, he's not going to get out of there until he's 60-something years old, if that's what you're faced with, you know, maybe for some percentage of the population, ending your life becomes some kind of rational option. You know, it's a horrific choice for somebody like that to make. It's not a choice that any of us should have to make. This is truly a major innovator, and you made the comparison of, you know, the government sometimes recruits really talented hackers and stuff. This wasn't a guy who was engaged in catch me if you can kind of stuff. He wasn't deceiving people. He was totally open about what he was doing and why he was doing it. It would be more like them going after a founder of Google for Google wanting to make more information available in their search results. It's really quite, I don't understand what their argument was from a legal or from a public safety standpoint. There was no victim here, you know, who was harmed by his project. It really does seem like this was a way to get him because, you know, what he did in raising awareness for SOPA was not illegal in any way. We have a freedom of speech in this country still, at least.
At least we do today.
Yeah, we do today for now. And it seems like since they couldn't get him for warning the public about SOPA, but maybe they could get him for this, and they tried as hard as they could. And it's scary to me that this is how we treat some of our best entrepreneurs and activists in this country right now.
So he really didn't do anything illegal. Would it have been a violation of anything, a copyright or something, to have made this information available?
Well, I mean, you could argue that it was illegal, but definitely not on the scale of spending more time in prison than a murderer or rapist. What he did was downloaded these academic journals, and I believe he had a subscription to them. And then when they cut him off, he tried to get the remaining articles through less straightforward means. I think he hooked his laptop right up to the server. So there's definitely, you know, you can argue that theft occurred, but it's not as if the articles were missing. You know, he just wanted a copy of it to make publicly available. So it seems to me like a lot of our laws that they're enforcing right now just are not meant for the internet. You know, it's like they're operating under a paradigm that no longer works. He wasn't harming anybody. It actually would have probably helped countless college students and researchers be able to access data and information and previous people's papers much easier. You know, he's making something easier and more widely available. And they really, why, you know, this is a federal case. It's quite crazy.
It really is. And you beautifully underscored the point that I was trying to make in that picture, Catch Me If You Can. This was a real check forger. If he wasn't doing anything so patently illegal, then why would they want to just destroy this person? And certainly somebody inside there, I mean, this is just surmise, this is just speculation on my part, but wouldn't you think somebody would know who was familiar with the case and the defendant, particularly on the prosecutorial side, that the young man had issues with depression? Wouldn't they have a complete dossier on him?
Well, there's some people online already who are saying that this particular prosecutor basically has blood on her hands for this level of overzealous prosecution. And I believe there's a petition that's been submitted on the White House website to have her removed from office. And I'm sure you've heard the phrase that the punishment doesn't fit the crime.
Well, it's like using an A-bomb on an anthill.
Yeah, this seems like something like maybe you give him, maybe if he's guilty of what they're accusing him of, what they were accusing him of, you give him, you know, 15 days in county jail or maybe, you know, a month in prison and then some limited fines and like a slap on the wrist. You don't ruin the rest of his life. You know, 35 years, one of the most productive, innovative people in the United States. I mean, he co-founded Reddit, which I think pulls in more than, I think, 1.5 billion or 2 billion page views a month. It was acquired by Condé Nast.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. It'd be like waking up one morning and finding out the government was trying to get Mark Zuckerberg just about. I mean, this kid was not motivated by profit. It appears he was motivated more by making a difference with technology. But it just scares me that this is how we treat the people who could be responsible for the next wave of innovation in this country, you know? And I think there might have been the They might have been threatened by him, to be honest, because he did a great job of warning the public about SOPA. And you know how people are in terms of limited attention spans. We have so many other things going on. You know, we got to pay our mortgages. We have to take our kids to school, all this stuff. It's hard to really focus on abstract technical things. But he did warn the public about SOPA, and he warned the public about NDAA. And they might have been threatened by his advocacy work. That's the only thing I can think of. And again, that's my speculation, but I'm certainly not the only person connecting these dots.
Yeah, this NDAA thing. Do you have any initiative in looking into that?
The NDAA, I think it's still an issue. I don't think it's been resolved. I think not enough.
No, I mean, are you hot on any of the latest goings on with that or in?
Yeah, the 2013 NDAA was signed into law. He threatened to veto it, same as last year. President Obama threatened to veto it, and then he signed it into law anyway. So this current version of the NDAA would appear to make it impossible for him to close down Guantanamo Bay, which was one of his campaign promises, was to close that thing down and end the torture down there. But, you know, he signed it into law, and the Feinstein Amendment, which initially received a lot of support, that was removed from the final version of this year's NDAA. And the Feinstein Amendment would have made it clear that Americans do have a right to a trial, that you can't just be abducted by the military without charge of trial. And what's so weird is that they removed that. Why remove something that seems so fundamental and, you know, is not a bad thing in any way? Why would you remove that?
Really, Feinstein wanted to write that into it.
Yeah, Feinstein, which is surprising because she has been, I think, one of the worst elected representatives on some other issues.
Yeah, understood. All righty then. Well, I appreciate you looking into this, and thanks for taking the time. The thing that's so appalling about this is not just that somebody who is so intelligent and so productive and their work was so completely prolific, it's the idea that any citizen, let alone, you know, some genius guy that's 26 years old could be put right under such pressure by the government that you just, you know, whacking yourself is better than trying to fight it. How can you fight it?
What's scary is if they're willing to go on an expensive witch hunt like this to ruin the career of someone who is really one of the more influential people in the tech community at the national level, what are they going to do to some local activist or some local programmer who's speaking out against some of these new legislation? Some of these new legislative actions to take away our online freedom. It's definitely troubling, and it's a tragedy, and I feel sorry for his family.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for joining us on the program tonight. What's next for you? Take about 30 seconds and tell us what are you working on right now, besides
sure,
the thing with Schwartz?
Yeah, I'm actually running for U.S. Congress against Debbie Wasserman Schultz down here in Florida. It's davidseamanforcongress.com if people want to check it out.
And, are you serious? That's excellent.
I'm dead serious. I'm so sick of her supporting things like SOPA and NDAA that somebody has to, somebody has to get her out of office, and we hope to do that. We have a great team down here in Florida. We're raising a lot of money, and we have people of all political persuasions joining us, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. We don't care. We just want her out. And we want some real common sense in Congress.
All right. And that's davidseamanforcongress.com?
Yes, it is. Thank you, John.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. By the way, speaking of NDAA, this is from Dan Johnson with pandaunite.org. Kicking off Operation Homeland Liberty on the 15th. He needs everybody to call a phone number. If you're interested, email me and I'll give it to you. I don't want to blow it out right now. I don't think that's, I don't know. I got a feeling about it. I might later. Wood County, Ohio. Call Wood County, Ohio Commission and very politely ask that they stop the NDAA. Okay, 419-354-9100. And very politely ask that they stop the NDAA. The commissioner's names are Jim Carter and Joel Kuhlman. So that's pandaunite.org. Take a look at it. See what you think. If you want to participate, do. All right, now, Larry Kelly's coming up. Lessons from Fallen Civilizations is his book, larrykelly.com. That's K-E-L-L-E-Y. Can't wait. This is going to be very, very interesting. Lessons from Fallen Civilizations on Coast to Coast AM.